This is KMXT Kodiak 100.1 FM in HD, HD2, HD3, and streaming live on the web at kmxt.org. We're heading into the noon news hour. Let's check in with the weather before we toss it on over to NPR headlines. Well, it's 40 degrees out at the Kodiak Airport. It's still rainy, a lot of fog and mist out there, and it's still pretty windy. We got a northeast wind running steady at 28 miles per hour, but gusting up anywhere to 38, 40 miles an hour. Right now, visibility is at 2 miles. The rain's going to stay heavy today, tonight, and tomorrow. We're looking at a high of 42, precipitation amounts between 3/4 and an inch. Tonight, another inch of rain, possibly. Winds gusting up to 35 miles per hour, low of 40. And then tomorrow, more heavy rain, high near 44, east wind around 25 miles per hour, gusting as high as 30. New rain amounts, between 1 and 2 inches possible for the Kodiak area. And then the heavy rains looks like it's going to continue for the next couple of days or so. Well, looking forward to the broadcast. We've got a story on Kodiak's new fire station. The city council approved a contract there. A recap of Comfish. Our reporters went out there and did some coverage of some pretty cool things out there. And then talking about another story about Pebble Mine. Coming up right after NPR News headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Senate has voted along party lines to kill the first article of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. The Democrats, who have a narrow majority in the Senate, are seeking a similar result on the second impeachment article. Senator Eric Schmidt is among the Republicans who've been pushing for a full trial.
To dismiss or table articles of impeachment against Secretary Mayorkas without a trial here today or in committee is an unprecedented move by Senator Schumer. Never before in the history of our republic has the Senate dismissed or tabled articles of impeachment when the impeached individual was alive and had not resigned.
The GOP-led House impeached Mayorkas in February, allegedly for failing to enforce immigration policy at the U.S. border with Mexico and lying to Congress. He's the first cabinet secretary in modern U.S. history to be impeached. Biden administration officials, meanwhile, dismiss the impeachment proceedings as politically motivated in an election year. The Manhattan criminal trial of former President Donald Trump goes quiet on Wednesdays as the judge works on other cases. But as NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben tells us, the former president is not using this first Wednesday away from court to campaign.
Trump is spending the day at his Westchester Golf Club, according to a campaign official. He will return to Trump Tower tonight to have dinner with Polish officials, including President Andrzej Duda. Trump called the right-wing politician his friend during his presidency. Duda, at one point, suggested the U.S. build a base called Fort Trump in Poland. But the two men have their differences. Among them, Duda is a staunch supporter of aid to Ukraine, which borders on Poland. Trump opposed a package including Ukraine aid earlier this year, and more recently has proposed lending money to help the country in fending off a Russian invasion. Jury selection in the criminal trial resumes Thursday. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
Haiti's de facto government has officially named the members of a transitional council. NPR's Zeta Peralta reports the council is supposed to appoint a new prime minister.
The members of the council include representatives of political parties and civil society organizations. Last month, in an effort to reel Haiti back from the brink, Haiti's de facto prime minister cut a deal with the international community. He agreed to step down once a new transitional council had named his successor, but the process has been repeatedly delayed by politicians, business groups, and other leaders who want to make sure they retain some power under a new government. The official announcement also comes with caveats. The announcement says some of the council members have not yet been vetted, and if they fail to provide some of the required documents, they will, quote, be forced to resign. Meanwhile, most of Haiti's capital is still under the control of gangs. Ada Peralta, NPR News, Mexico City.
From Washington, this is NPR News. President Biden wants to triple the tariff rate on imports of Chinese steel and aluminum. And he was to address a tariff hike in a re-election campaign speech today at the headquarters of the United Steelworkers Union in Pittsburgh. He's often described himself as staunchly pro-union. He made the announcement in light of a Japanese company's bid to acquire U.S. Steel. The Summer Olympic Games in Paris are in 100 days. French police evicted hundreds of people from a makeshift shelter this morning. Rebecca Rossman reports aid workers are concerned it's part of a broader effort by the French government to push the homeless population out of the capital ahead of the games.
Images and video posted on social media show dozens of French police evicting people out of an abandoned bus company headquarters, which in recent weeks had become home to some 450 migrants. Humanitarian organizations say the camp had doubled in size in the last year, after hundreds of people living in what will become the Paris Olympic Village were told they had to move. Advocates are calling for the city to provide more support. The Paris mayor's office says it's trying to find space to accommodate those forced to go. Last year, the French government set up 10 temporary shelters. Some people have been bused to other cities like Bordeaux and Orléans. Officials have denied the relocations are connected to the Olympics. For NPR News, I'm Rebecca Rossman in Paris.
U.S. stocks ended the day lower. The Dow closed down 45 points to settle at 37,753. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. Capital One, what's in your wallet? Details at CapitalOne.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at MacFound.org.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Construction can now begin on Kodiak's new fire station after the City Council approved a contract with Osborne Construction Company on Thursday night. The company is slated to break ground on the project on Mill Bay Road as soon as the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. Osborne Construction proposed a firm fixed price at the end of February of just over $24 million to construct the city's new fire station. That means, regardless of the cost of materials or other factors that might change during construction, the company won't bill the city for more than that amount. The council's longest-serving member, Charles Davidson, noted this project has been a priority for years.
And it's a fixed fee, so hopefully we'll be getting it at that price. I mean, that seems like an awful lot of money for a small town like ours, but it's a critical service when you consider our geographic location and the safety that this is going to propose to our community that we don't presently have.
Deputy City Manager Josie Banky broke down the cost of the fire station during Thursday's meeting. She says the city will pay about $2.5 million to fully fund the multi-million dollar construction project.
We are recommending the use of earned interest on bank accounts over the past year to fund construction and believe this is an effective reinvestment strategy in our fire and EMS heroes to ensure they have a modern, safe, and mission-ready facility.
Council members unanimously agreed with Banky's funding strategy. The rest of the money is coming from the state of Alaska's legislative grants, federal funds from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and transfers the city has already made out of its general fund. Council member John Whidden says this is a huge accomplishment for the city to undertake this project with a debt-free plan.
This is a legacy project for the council and for the community. This is a project that's actually going to be that you'll hold on because I believe it's also going to be a community center to hold on to our community.
Wolf Architecture is working on the final design phase and will be involved in the construction process to ensure their design becomes reality. According to the contract with Osborne Construction, the company has 20 days to issue a notice to proceed, which will include a date for work to begin. It's estimated that a substantial amount of the construction of the City of Kodiak's new fire station will be complete by the end of 2025.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. Since 1979, GCI has invested in the future of Alaska. GCI is committed to keeping schools and healthcare facilities connected for Alaskans. More information at gci.com/business.
Comfish, Kodiak's annual commercial fisheries trade show, had some big names at its forums, including the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's Commissioner, Doug Vincent Lang. His job is mostly focused on ecology, but as KMXT's Brian Venois reports, the commissioner opened his remarks by talking about economic sustainability.
Well, without a market, what's the use of having fisheries out there?
Vincent Lang said in his speech that when he took the job leading the department, he thought he'd mostly be answering questions about biology and harvest rates. He says now he keeps an eye on the economic side of the industry as well.
I can guarantee you it's not going to go unnoticed in terms of the amount of effort I'm going to put towards it to make sure that we don't end up losing fishermen, we don't end up losing processors, and we don't end up losing fisheries and the importance that that has in terms of tax revenue to our local community.
The overall consensus shared at Comfish this year was that the entire commercial fishing industry is in trouble. Processing companies and fishermen alike have shared concern about how global seafood markets affect them. Some companies like Peter Pan Seafoods and OBI Seafoods have announced plants will close. Vincent Lang says now that the federal government has protected U.S. seafood markets, Alaska fishermen can help fill any gaps, but commercial fisheries are facing myriad of issues other than economics. Vincent Lang also shared concerns about a petition to declare Chinook salmon as an endangered species.
This is an attempt to shut our fisheries down, all of our fisheries, for the Gulf of Alaska.
He says while stocks for the species are down, they don't need intervention from the federal government yet. Some Alaska residents have partially blamed bycatch and intercept fisheries for why Chinook are struggling to hit escapement goals. Vincent Lang says he wants to minimize bycatch or incidental harvest by limiting fishing in areas it's most common.
We're trying to tackle this using the innovation of the fishing industry with some kind of performance metrics and new science that informing genetics to hopefully keep the fishing industry in the water.
The commissioner also talked about researching how much hatchery fish compete with wild stocks, controversy over electronic monitoring, and wanting to expand the department's role in managing areas like in the Cook Inlet. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has upheld its denial of a permit for the proposed Pebble Mine upstream from Bristol Bay. As reported by Alaska Public Media, the decision issued on Monday is the latest in a long string of legal and administrative rulings against the project. But opponents of the gold mine say their fight is not over.
Pebble will not be over until we have federal legislation basically saying Bristol Bay is protected forever and it's permanent.
That's Lindsay Bloom, a strategist with Salmon State, part of the coalition of tribes, native corporations, fishermen, and lodge owners that have fought the mine for decades. More than a year ago, the Environmental Protection Agency issued a final determination that a mine in that area of the Bristol Bay watershed would damage or destroy miles of salmon streams and more than 2,000 acres of wetlands. The decision is referred to as a veto. In its decision on Monday, the Corps said, as long as the veto is in place, it can't issue a permit. Pebble Vice President Mike Heatwall says the company is focused on a lawsuit seeking to overturn the veto. He points out that the Corps' decision is based on the veto and didn't address Pebble's points on appeal. The Corps says its decision is made, quote, without prejudice, close quote, suggesting that Pebble can request a consideration if the EPA veto disappears. For mine opponents like Bloom, the seemingly endless administrative appeals and lawsuits point to the need for Congress to pass a law to put a stop to the project for good.
History shows us that the mining industry doesn't take no for an answer. And so they will continue to litigate, most likely, and keep this going for generations to come until we have those permanent protections for Bristol Bay that are so needed.
Meanwhile, the New York Times reports that the Biden administration is about to deal a blow to a different mining proposal in northwest Alaska, the Ambler Mine. The Times says that the Interior Department is going to recommend against a 200-mile road to the copper deposit, finding that it would, quote, significantly and irrevocably hurt the environment and more than 30 tribal communities that fish and hunt in the area. The report is based on anonymous sources. The Interior Department didn't confirm or deny the story. Ambler Metals issued a statement urging the federal agency to reconsider. Caleb Froelich, the company's managing director, said if the Times report is true, the agency would be making a political decision that ignores local support for the mine and denies jobs to Alaskans. A fish passage restoration project will soon bring improvements to the movement and health of a southern Kenai Peninsula salmon population. KDLL's Hunter Morrison has more on the project.
In February, the borough announced plans to redesign and replace two fish passage culverts off of borough-maintained Oil Well Road in Ninilchik. The area, which is part of the Deep Creek watershed, is home to a number of fish populations, including salmon and Dolly Varden. The Fish and Wildlife Service put together a project proposal and received over $1.3 million from the 2023 Bipartisan Infrastructure Law. The borough also appropriated $50,000 from Road Service Area Funds.
We must have wrote a compelling story about, locally, the need, obviously, to ensure that salmon can move freely.
This is Kyle Graham, a biologist with Fish and Wildlife, who's working on the project.
Emphasize hey, we're working with tribes and local government to, kind of match the federal monies with the right locations.
Fish and Wildlife has worked closely with the Ninilchik Native Association on several improvement projects within the corporation's 70,000 acres of land surrounding the Ninilchik and Kisilof rivers. Association President and CEO Greg Insuleski says the area has lost much of its salmon population. The organization is now purchasing troll-caught salmon from southeast Alaska.
And our people have always ate king salmons and silvers, and so we've lost both of that. Fish passage is so important because of the sustainability of the stock and the rearing.
The replacement culverts are located within two tributary streams that connect to the larger watershed. Streams are important to salmon fry, as they provide optimal rearing habitat.
Our people have lived off of fish from time immemorial, and it's actually, a lot of people say it's in our DNA, and I believe it is, but it's a very spiritual thing to us, too. Our health depends on healthy fish and good fish to survive.
Graham says another motivation for the project is a past flood that blew out a fish culvert in the watershed. He says after the flood, FEMA would only replace the culvert using the original design that was damaged.
We're incorporating a design that is way better for fish, and it's improved the infrastructure, and ultimately, for the Ninilchik folks, creates safe and efficient access to subsistence resources. And not having to be concerned that, when there's a big flood or whatever the future holds, that a crossing is going to wash out.
The project will soon go through a design process, and construction will likely begin in late 2025 or early 2026. Graham hopes the project will benefit salmon, the borough, and the Native Association. In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
A national environmental nonprofit named the Kobuk River in northwest Alaska among America's most endangered rivers on Tuesday. Advocates for the Kobuk say threats posed by the proposed Ambler Road and mining projects are a big part of why it was chosen. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George has more.
Growing up, China Kantner spent half the year on the Kobuk River at her family's camp near the village of Ambler.
In the fall time, we would go upriver, wait for the caribou to go through, pick berries, maybe get a couple of pike, dry some pike while we were there.
The Kantners would spend winters in Kotzebue and come back upriver in the spring in time for geese and caribou. Kantner is a member of Protect the Kobuk, a group of 700 people, mostly residents of northwest Alaska. They're fighting to block development of the Ambler Road, a proposed 200-mile industrial road that would cut through the Kobuk River's watershed to access copper and zinc deposits.
Growing up this way has made it really clear how important it is to protect what we have. This is totally a food security issue. We want to protect what we have and the animals and plants that we rely on.
On Tuesday, the environmental nonprofit American Rivers released its annual list of 10 endangered U.S. rivers. Rivers facing immediate threats from climate change, pollution, and development. The Kobuk is number 8 on the list. Sarah Deardall is the Northwest Region Director for American Rivers. She says no protections come with the endangered status, but it helps to bring attention to rivers that are facing an imminent threat.
Our Most Endangered Rivers report is really highlighting a river in crisis that's at a crossroads and where there's an opportunity for action in the next year.
The Trump administration issued federal permits for the road in 2020, but President Biden suspended them 2 years later, saying the environmental analysis was not adequate. The Biden administration released a draft analysis last fall and is expected to deliver a final report very soon. The New York Times is reporting the administration will deny permits for the road. But even if that happens, activists are preparing for a long fight. Kantner sees parallels to the decades-long fight over Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay.
People in that region have been fighting Pebble Mine for a long, long time. And so I think it's clear to us that we have a lot of work to do, regardless of what the decision is.
Ambler Metals did not respond to a request for comment, but the company told the New York Times in October that it's confident it can address any environmental concerns brought up in the report. The road also has support from Alaska's congressional delegation and the state-owned development bank known as ADA. Clarence Wood Grippenshaw grew up in Ambler. He's 26, Inupiaq, and commercially fishes for Chum Salmon in Kotzebue Sound. He says he's concerned about the road interrupting caribou and bird migration and pollution coming downstream from the mine threatening salmon, shefish, and other species.
Everything's connected here. Our water shed is our lifeline. If that water gets contaminated, we're all doomed.
Wood Grippenshaw says he expects a prolonged fight over the Ambler Road, but he says the Kobuk River has supported his people for thousands of years. It's worth fighting for. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
A wrestler from the Northwest Arctic may be headed to the Olympics this summer. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
Spencer Wood says he fell in love with wrestling when he was in second grade at Shokanak School.
It was a sport that just, you know, that I gravitated towards ever since, you know, I was little.
Wood started out wrestling freestyle as a kid, but the 25-year-old now competes in Greco-Roman style. He says growing up in rural Alaska, basketball and wrestling were the only options for sports, and he chose wrestling.
Of everything, I liked the individuality of the sport. I liked that, you know, everything I do will either help me or hurt me. You know, I can't point fingers during competition because, you know, I've had all the opportunity to train for whatever happens on competition days.
Wood says growing up in Shugnak, a community of around 250, and later moving to the more populated but still remote city of Kotzebue, shaped him as an athlete.
In the lower 48, you know, there's a common saying it takes a village, but in Alaska, it feels a little bit more literal. And, you know, I kind of had a disadvantage. You know, I didn't have as many competitions. I didn't have as much exposure to the sport as other athletes. But no other athlete had to grow up the way I grew up. They don't know, you know, what it's like to be out in 40 below and chase caribou, or, you know, just like everything that, that, you know, kind of makes our home.
After earning his bachelor's degree in biology, Woods joined the Army. He spent the last several years away from home, stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Woods is part of the World Class Athlete Program, which allows soldier athletes to train and compete in high-level competitions, like the Olympics and Paralympics, while they are enlisted. Woods says the discipline of the Army and the program helped him focus on athletics.
You know, I just made a decision a long time ago that I was going to be the best wrestler that I can be. And so I said yes to that. So I'm saying no to all these different things. Because I said yes to being a world-class athlete, you know, I'm being disciplined in my sleep. You know, I don't go out on weekends. You know, I don't eat junk food.
Wood says he has an intense training schedule, practicing at least 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. He's already competed in 2 world championships and believes he has a good chance of making the U.S. Olympic team. Woods says being able to compete at an international level has been his dream since he was in high school. He credits a lot of his success to the support he received from the region and his parents. He says although his training schedule is intense at the moment, he wants to return to the Northwest Arctic and encourage kids to keep going, even when times are tough.
You know, every time I'm back home, you know, I talk to the kids in Shungnak. You know, my story seems a little unbelievable to some, but, you know, it's if you're stubborn enough, you know, you can do it.
Woods will be at the Wrestling Olympic Trials in Maryland later this week, where he will find out for certain if he will be going to the Summer Games in Paris. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way. 486-4782.
President Biden wants to boost tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum. I'm Novosavo with a Marketplace Minute. The White House says China is flooding the U.S. with those products at artificially low prices thanks to government subsidies. The president wants the U.S. Trade Representative to study the idea of tripling the current 7.5% tariff on steel and aluminum imported from China. United Airlines reported first quarter earnings that pleasantly surprised investors. It only lost $164 million, less than expected. The company is struggling in large part because of safety and production problems at Boeing. Tesla is asking shareholders to reinstate CEO Elon Musk's pay package worth as much as $56 billion over 10 years. A Delaware judge threw out the deal in January. I'm Novosavo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
All right, we have just a couple minutes for the Island Messenger. Let's just check back in with the weather. 41 degrees off the Kodiak Airport, 2 miles of visibility with all that rainy fog and mist and wind out there. Wind from the east at 25 miles an hour, gusting up to 44. Right now, expect heavy rain for the rest of today and the next 2 days, it looks like. Low around 40 tonight, high near 44 tomorrow. Winds, again, from the east. It's just pounding us from the east, gusting as high as 30 miles per hour. Well, the sun rose at 6:51 a.m. today, and it'll set tonight at 9:27 p.m., giving us 14 hours and 36 minutes of some daylight, perhaps, gaining 4 minutes and 53 seconds since yesterday. And the sun will rise tomorrow at 6:49 a.m. Our record high was 60 in 1965, record low 12 in 1927. For the marine forecast, there's this huge front that's just trotting its way over the Western Gulf for the next few days, which turns into a lot of gale warnings around the area. From Marmot Island to Sitkanak, from 15 to 85 nautical miles, there's a gale warning today and tomorrow. Right now, east wind of 45 knots with seas at 24 feet in rain, and tonight, southeast wind of 35 knots with seas at 22 feet in rain. For Chiniak Bay today, gale warning with an east wind of 40 knots with seas at 16 feet. Tonight, east wind of 30 knots with seas at 10 feet in rain. For Marmot Bay today, gale warning with an east wind of 40 knots and seas at 18 feet with rain. Tonight, east wind of 30 knots, seas at 12 feet with rain. And finally, for the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today and tomorrow. Right now, east wind of 45 knots with seas at 12 feet in rain. And tonight, east wind of 30 knots with seas at 8 feet in rain. Tide table. Well, in the Kodiak District, we have a low tide this evening at 5:12 p.m. of 1.2 feet. High tide right around midnight, 12:02 a.m. of 6.2 feet. And a low tide at 5:33 a.m. tomorrow of 3.2 feet. Over on the west side in Larsen Bay, low tide 5:38 p.m. of 2.4 feet. High tide at 12:22 a.m. of 10.3 feet. And a low tide in the morning, 6:19 a.m. of 4.9 feet. We have a couple minutes to take a look at the community bulletin board. The Whale Fest activity for today is to go over to the library and watch Whale Rider, a movie about New Zealand's Wangara people who believe their ancient ancestor arrived on the back of a whale. That's 6:30 p.m. today at the library. This weekend, don't miss the Kodiak Shakespeare's next play, Kodachrome, by Adam Simkovich. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. It's a show for the whole family. It features some really moving performances by Alaska's greatest young actors. You don't want to miss this show. Plenty of laughs, plenty of tears. Tickets and show times are at kodiakshakespeares.ludus.com. The St. Herman Sisterhood Bake Sale, also this Saturday, April 20th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., over at the Holy Resurrection Orthodox Cathedral. All your favorites will be there. Parak, potato salad, pastries, and much, much more. And the big gala event this weekend is the Diamond Jubilee. That's right, Kodiak Arts Council celebrating 60 years of service to Kodiak. They'll be presenting their Arts and Adventure Auction. Doors open at 6 p.m. That's when the silent auction opens, and then the live auction begins at 7. And if you want to become a Diamond Jubilee table sponsor, give them a call, 907-942-5840. It's going to be a fun weekend out there. Stay safe and stay dry.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.